Welcome in. It's the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. Always great to have you with us. Alongside Blue Ribbon's Chris Dorch, I'm Kevin Ingram. We make our way through the final week of the regular season for a lot of the power conferences around college basketball. And some will have their championships clinched this weekend. And you'll see the automatic bids going out for a few of the conferences, including the OVC and the Big South, Missouri Valley, and the Atlantic Sun. So all those leagues will know their automatic qualifiers by the time the weekend is done. Chris, what's going on, man?
Oh, man, I'm just watching ball, getting more excited as the days goes on. Looking forward a week from this very day. I hope that you and I are at a certain Nashville establishment where we frequent.
Bridgestone Arena or some of the other establishments around
well,
that?
Well, that too. Let's just say that the queso is served in an iron skillet.
Yes, it is. Yeah, but a couple blocks from Bridgestone Arena is one of our favorite places to eat whenever Chris is in town. So that'll be a lot of fun. First things first, though, you're going to a game on Saturday. You're going to see Tennessee play Kentucky, which should be a really interesting game at Thompson Bowling Arena in Knoxville. Tennessee clinched the SEC with their win against South Carolina on Wednesday. They went on the road to Columbia and avenged an earlier loss against the Gamecocks, 66-59. Dalton Kennect scored 26. He had the Kennect four play, as he called it, the four-point play that was key. After Carolina had rallied from 14 points down to get back within a bucket. But the game on Saturday, you think about the meeting in Lexington last month when the Vols hung 100 on the Cats. And at its best, and I've seen Kentucky twice, including this week, at its best, Kentucky could beat anybody. But Tennessee has shown the ability, Chris, to me, to adapt to whatever style they need to. That game in Alabama, they held them down and got stops at the end to win in Tuscaloosa. Kentucky brings Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham off the bench, and those are two of the best players in the country. And Chris might have to battle the NBA scouts for a seat in Knoxville on Saturday. So that should be a lot of fun to be there and interest. It'll be a great atmosphere, of course. And the two teams that I think are the best two teams in the SEC.
Yeah, it'll be packed. And, you know, if Tennessee hadn't taken care of business at South Carolina, like you said, this would be for all the marbles. And it's a pride game. I know that since Rick Barnes has returned to Tennessee, Tennessee used to just get punked by Kentucky on the regular. And I think Rick is 11-9 versus Cal since he's been back. And but sometimes they'll trade, like Tennessee will win up there and Kentucky will win in Knoxville. So, you know, that's a distinct possibility. But I'll tell you what, except for that South Carolina game in Knoxville where they missed a metric ton of layups and free throws, they have been a juggernaut at home. I mean, they beat Florida by 20, Alabama by 20, punked Ole Miss. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a great game. I think Tennessee wants to close it out. It just really goes to show you, and this is my suggestion for the week. Leagues that don't have an all-newcomer team in addition to an all-freshman team need to get one. Because you look at the transfers that have come in. Let's take the SEC. I mean, Florida has done a great job. They start four transfers, and those guys need to be recognized if they're not otherwise all-conference. That's not going to happen with Dalton Kennect of Tennessee, who's going to be player of the year and first team all conference, probably first team all American, probably going to win the Julius Erving Award for small forward of the year. He's had a heck of a year, but transfers have been such a big part of the landscape now. But the deal with Tennessee is they've selectively taken transfers. Kennect, they needed a score. They got Kennect. To a lesser degree, Jordan Ganey has been helpful at times. But mainly, they've built it with three- and four-star players and just keeping guys around. You know, and they've got two 50-year seniors in James and Vescovi, who, you know, you look at the box score at South Carolina, they both score 2 points. And last year, if you'd have said those two guys are only going to score two, South Carolina beats them, but they've got Kennect, but they're a veteran team that I think at home, they're going to be hard to beat tomorrow. But like you, I'm impressed with Kentucky's talent. And gosh, if they could just consistently perform on the defensive end, I think they could go a long way in March. They've just got so much firepower. I mean, I think they shoot 42% from three. That's off the hook as a team. It's just off the hook. And especially for a Cal team, because, you know, that's been their weakness in his tenure, is they just haven't had that many three-point shooters. They've had some good ones over the years, obviously, but not as a group like they have this year.
Couple quick thoughts on both those teams for me. I thought their game at Alabama, Tennessee's last Saturday, was really one of their more impressive wins, because everything didn't go exactly as planned for them in that game, but they found a way to win, and Alabama had a chance to tie or maybe win there in the final possession or two. And it felt like they got Alabama to take a couple bad shots from three when they had a chance to tie, and they did a great job.
Mark Sears took one.
Yeah, Mark Sears for sure. And it just felt like their defense came through and they made enough plays. And I just, the veteran guys they have, as you described, and just having all those pieces that it takes in teams that you see that make deep runs. You think about, they got the great scorer in Connect. They have the great point guard in Zakai Ziegler. They have the good big in Adu, and they have more coming off the bench. Those two veterans in Vescovy and James, and they have good supporting cast coming off the bench. It just feels like if Tennessee's go to a Final Four, it feels like this is group to do it. And I don't see how they're not a number one seed, regardless of how tomorrow or the SEC tournament or any of that goes. To me, it feels like they've done enough. On the flip side for Kentucky, and again, I saw them on Wednesday night at Rupp. We played there with Vanderbilt. The scoring punch that they get off the bench when Dillingham and Reed Shepherd come in the game is just remarkable. And they already have, you know, about three All-Americans on the court even before those guys come off the bench.
Yeah.
But Reed Shepherd, you know, he can have a monster game scoring, or he can score 7 or 8 points, but he still has a big impact on the game just with his court vision and his ability to make great passes and advance the ball quickly down the court to get them good looks at the other end.
And even defensively.
And defensively. But even after a make, they get the ball out of the basket and get it to the other end really quickly and have an opportunity, you know, to attack the rim or shoot a three. And Dillingham's ability just to come in and put the ball in the basket a whole bunch of times in a short amount of time is crazy. He hit one shot where it felt like, I mean, it was off his hand in about a half second, and he just made this 18-footer like it was nothing. It wasn't a three. It was a long two. But to me, that was the one shot that really got me the most in watching them. And they have bigs for days. You know, they start the game with Onyenso, and if that doesn't work, they bring in a Vesic, and, you know, 4 minutes into the game. And if that doesn't work, they bring in Bradshaw. So they have all these interchangeable 7-footers, and they got Antonio Reeves, who's played a lot, and Mitchell, and that team. Like you say, if they can play any measure of defense, they can just score so many points that they're going to be hard to beat. And it's a different kind of game when you get into the NCAA tournament. But, man, that team looks like if they can defend at all, they're going to be a tough out, because it's just so hard to keep up with what they do offensively and put enough points on the board to hang with those guys. So that'll be a fun matchup on Saturday. And, yeah, you better get there early, man. There's going to be some scouts in the house, you know?
Yeah, I'll have to fight for position. luckily, a few years back, they moved the scouts to a location over the entryway where the team comes out of the locker room onto the court.
Yeah.
So those guys kind of have their own area. It used to be where we sat elbow to elbow with scouts, and that was kind of cool. You'd get to know some people, and they can't really say anything on the record, but they'll give you their thoughts on people.
Yeah, they can tell you some stuff. They may
so
not be able to say it on the record.
I miss kind of intermingling with those guys, but yeah, there'll be a ton of people there. I mean, Dalton Connect has turned himself into a lottery pick. If you hear Jimmy Dykes, he says he might be the first collegian picked. I don't think that'll be the case, but he's a top 10 pick, and he should be, man. He's got all the scoring weapons, such as, I don't remember many players like him. Let's put it that way. And for him to have not gotten any D1s out of high school, to have had to go to JUCO, to have had to go to a smaller D1 school in Northern Colorado, and then to come here, I mean, gosh, it's a great advertisement for Rick Barnes, kind of like finishing school. You can go to the portal and say, look what we did with Connect. You know, if you can come in here and shoot it, and we'll teach you how to guard, you too can be a lottery pick.
That's right. Let's jump over to award season real quick and talk about the race for the National Player of the Year, because we're talking about Dalton Knecht, who is sure to be a first-team All-American. And I know Zach Edey will probably win, and he's had another fantastic season. But for me, I think I'd almost pick between Knecht and R.J. Davis of North Carolina, who's had a great year, too. He's averaging 21 a game and shooting 41% from three and almost 90% from the foul line. He's another guy who can be just a scoring machine. How do you look at that? And again, I assume Edey's probably going to win, but you can make a case for a couple other guys.
You really could. R.J. Davis has had a great season. It's crazy. When Caleb left North Carolina for Arizona, everybody thought, well, that's addition by subtraction. And in fairness to Love, he's had a great season at Arizona. So it maybe seems like it was a case of there wasn't enough basketballs for the two of them. So when they split, they both had great years. So he definitely is in the conversation. I'm going to have to say Edey because of his season-long consistency. But if Dalton Knecht, he was in the middle. In fact, he set a Dean Dome record with 37 points at North Carolina. He was in the middle of leading them back from – they just got embarrassed in the first half. Hurts his ankle. He's ineffective for 2 weeks. I think he had a 5-point game and a 2-point game. If it weren't for that stretch, I think he might really be nipping at Edey's heels. But I think Edey is probably the guy. Dalton Knecht will get his share of awards, though. I think he's SEC Player of the Year. I think he's a first-team All-American, and I think he'll win the Julius Erving Small Forward of the Year. If he doesn't, they should retire that award. This guy, I said it earlier, but in all the years I've covered college basketball, I don't know a guy who is as adept at scoring at all three levels like he is and mixes them up at all three levels. Jimmy Dykes had this stat on ESPN the other night where he's taken – almost as many shots at the rim, mid-range, and three-point shots, you know, just about the same number of all those. He scores in transition. He's a killer out-of-bounds play guy. They did that to South Carolina, even though that's on everybody's radar now. But they still set a staggered screen, and he dives to the rim, and Ziegler makes a great pass from underneath the backboard, and he slams it like Superman. So. That guy's got – it's one of the better stories in college basketball, how that cat was relatively unknown until this year. It's just amazing because he's – you look at him and he's built like a pro.
Duke and North Carolina will be another interesting game coming up on Saturday. Both top 10 teams, and they're playing really for the ACC championship. Duke with a home win, they can tie with North Carolina. Tar Heels are 16-3. The Blue Devils are 15-4. North Carolina won the first time around a few weeks ago when they played in Chapel Hill, but that's always a great rivalry game, no matter what the teams are like or where they are in the standings. And of course, they've had the big Final Four matchups with Coach K and his retirement a couple seasons ago. So there are always a lot of interesting storylines in those teams play.
Yeah. And we've both been to that building. That place is nuts. I think the job John Shire has done, I mean, some people were critical. Some people were upset. I'm talking to you, Tommy Amaker, when he was appointed the heir apparent to Coach K. But I think it was a masterful decision. He's really cool. Even when Filipowski was getting mowed down at Wake Forest, he rushed out there, but it wasn't fist swinging. He rushed out there to restore peace. He was still cool. He's a great recruiter. Coach K always let his assistants, handle practices, handle interviews. He was ready for the job, and he's done a great job. And Hubert Davis, some people wondered whether the aberration in his coaching career was that Final Four run, and the norm was last year when they really fell apart. But I think he's proven that, I can coach. And they're getting good players. And it didn't hurt that Bacot came back as a fifth-year senior, and he's a stud, flat out double-double machine. So it's going to be a great game. I'm going to miss it as always because I'm always at the Kentucky-Tennessee game, it seems like. But what time does that one start? Kentucky's and Tennessee's at 4.
The Carolina Duke game is 5:30 Central, 6:30 Eastern time.
Bummer, I'm gonna miss
so,
it.
So you could, I mean, you could see the
I
game.
I might catch and a little. Yeah.
You could, you know, always but, have it on your
but
phone.
But yeah, it'll be a great game. And you know, I've always said, and I even wrote a book, or helped write a book for Sports Illustrated. It's a kid's book, Greatest Rivalries in Sports. And one of the ones they gave me was Duke and Carolina. And if nothing else but proximity, which they're just minutes from one mm-hmm. another, that would be great. But they're just always right up there near the top, except for last year when Carolina stumbled a little bit. And they always get great players. They always have good coaching. And their fan support is, you know, right up there with Kentucky as the best in the country, I think. So, it's going to be great. My only regret about seeing live games is I miss a bunch of them on TV, but yeah. What are you going to do? You got to get out and be amongst the people, man.
That's right. Yeah. I felt like I was amongst the people up in Lexington the other night. I was trying to pack up my radio gear when the game was over and all these people were crowded around trying to get to a few of the players for Kentucky that were doing radio interviews and they were trying to get autographs and they were done. I was like, man, you know, need to have Dorcher. Somebody help me with some security, but I got all my stuff and got out of the way and they were able to get their autographs and everything worked out all right. Hey, by the way, I did see some of the interview and that we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Wes Durham sitting down with Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski, and what I saw was fantastic. And of course, we've known Wes great. For years, and he did a great job with it. It was really funny, but it was really insightful too to hear those guys talk about different parts of their careers in college basketball and some of the strategy and different things. It was really cool.
I'll tell you what, people didn't know, as successful as he was at Kansas, people didn't know how good old Roy was until he came home and was at Carolina, and he was able to win 3 national championships in his tenure there. And of course, Krzyzewski, I think, is the greatest coach of the modern era. So to hear their recollections, but Wes, whom I've known since he was at Marshall, you know, he started, you know, he could have started probably at a bigger place, but I met him there when I was covering the SoCon, and he handled that interview great. He's an irreverent appreciator of college basketball, having grown up as the son of a legend, Woody Durham. And I thought it was cool. I don't know if you saw his tweet the other day. He posted his father's the sheet like you make up with the rosters and everything. Right. From the last Duke Carolina game he ever did. And you saw the great man's handwriting on there, and it was all handwritten, and he had his way just like you have your way. And it was cool to see that. I tweeted back at him. I said, that should be in the Naismith Hall of Fame right there. But Woody was a great man, and his son, the apple did not fall far from the tree.
No, for sure. And Woody Durham was one of the greatest basketball announcers and great play-by-play announcers, period, for that matter. But
big blue ribbon guy, too.
Yeah, I wish, you know, growing up in Kentucky and living in Tennessee for years, I never really got many opportunities to hear him call games. But the times I did, it was just like gold listening to him call the Carolina games. He was just an amazing announcer.
The Vince Scully of college basketball.
And so is Wes. I mean, Wes is a fantastic broadcaster in his own right. He did Georgia Tech for a long time. He, of course, was here at Vanderbilt for a while. Does the Atlanta Falcons still, and does a lot of ACC games.
I don't know how he has enough time in a day.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I've talked to him before. Yeah, I've talked to him before about the travel and just how it makes it all work. And it's a lot of moving parts to be able to accomplish all that, especially during football season. A few other games going on. Houston can clench a share of the Big 12 with a win, or they clinched a share of the Big 12 with a win at UCF 67-59, but they can clinch outright with a win over Kansas in a rematch. Kansas had their way with the Cougars the first time around when they played in Lawrence. But if they can win that game, Houston can, or a loss by Iowa State at Kansas State would give Houston the outright championship in what's been a really tough league this year, the Big 12. Arizona will be the answer to a trivia question. Who won the last ever Pac-12 regular season championship? It's the Wildcats. They're 15-4 after a blowout win at UCLA last night. Washington went over and spoiled senior night at Washington State. And do you think Colorado knocked out Oregon from NCAA contention with their win over the Ducks?
I'll tell you what, I'd be worried if I were Dana Altman's crew. I pause now to give a moment of silence, not really. But I mourn the loss of the Pac-12.
Me too.
You know, we make fun of Dan, of Bill Walton for Tournament of Champions, but
the Conference of Champions.
The Conference of Champions, I mean. And I'm going to miss it. I mean, I'm going to miss those Thursday games. It's a great league. And it just goes to show you that if your conference commissioner is asleep at the wheel, unlike the commissioners of the Big 12 and the SEC, you could lose the whole thing. And that's exactly what happened. And unless for some reason there's some kind of reverse deal the remaining two, Oregon State and Washington State, are able to hold on to the name and maybe absorb the Mountain West, we've seen the last of one of the greatest leagues in the history of college athletics. And that, to me, that's to be mourned.
It's the first week of conference tournaments. Mentioned the first automatic bids going out this weekend in the OVC. It will be the Western Illinois Little Rock winner against the winner of Morehead State and UT Martin. Big South will be on Sunday, Missouri Valley Sunday, Atlantic Sun on Sunday. Some of these games have been wild, especially in the A-Sun. That'll be Austin Peay at Stetson for the championship there. They've had buzzer beaters and upsets and everything else in that league. One of the more bizarre games of the season was in the West Coast Conference tournament on Thursday. Pepperdine beat Pacific 102-43. The Waves started the game on a 26-0 run. They were up 39-2 and 56-9 at halftime. Whatever your season's been like, I guess it could be even worse when you look at the way that game went. Goodness sakes, what on earth was going on in the Pepperdine Pacific game?
Yeah, it's nuts. Pacific had already relieved their coach, Leonard Perry, of his duties. And Pepperdine coach Lorenzo Romar is out after the season. He's coaching through the end of the West Coast Conference tournament, which I suspect will end the next game they play. But that 59-point win is the fifth largest in a conference tournament game in D1 history, which is nuts. And it's like Roe is saying, you know, maybe you made a mistake letting me check on out of here. But, 102-43, I'm sure Pacific is really in disarray. They were 8-22 overall headed into that game, and 3-11 in the tough West Coast Conference. So there's two jobs in that league. They'll be coveted, but, you know, you're just going to get pounded by St. Mary's and Gonzaga, even San Francisco and Santa Clara. Yeah. That is a tough, tough league. And I see why Gonzaga hangs in there. This year is kind of a case study in that, because until they beat Kentucky at Kentucky, which Mark Few cleverly scheduled in February just to give them a quad one opportunity, they didn't have a quad one win. So I can see why Gonzaga stays in there, because, you know, they're going to win their league or challenge St. Mary's for it, and they're going to have a chance to win their conference tournament. And they're also going to be able to schedule whoever they want. Most years they beat quad one teams. This year they didn't. So staying in that West Coast Conference, you know, they're always going to get a chance to play in the NCAAs because they can win their conference tournament.
Yeah, that league is way more than the Big Two and everybody else this year. Some of those teams are really good. I saw San Francisco in person. They played at Vanderbilt back early in the season. And I was really impressed with that group. So, yeah, that's a tough league and tougher top to bottom than it has been maybe in a while. You look at some coaching situations. Mike Davis is out at Detroit Mercy after a tough year. They went 1-31. Sounds like Mike Woodson's going to return to Indiana, if you believe the reporting there. 17-13, 9-10 in the Big Ten with one to go. The Hoosiers just had a bad middle stretch of the season. They lost 10 out of 14, but it sounds like Coach Woodson will be back for another year in Bloomington.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. The Indianapolis Star reported it first, and you know, they started out 10-3 and 2-0 in the Big Ten, but they lost 10 of their next 14. They did right the ship a little bit and won three in a row, and I guess that's maybe what saved him. But West Virginia is going to be an interesting search. They went interim after Coach Huggins got fired back in the summer. The names I'm hearing there, and these all work for me, Mark Byington, I'm James Madison. Dustin Kearns, who's a friend, an old friend, he's coached Appalachian State to the brink of the Sun Belt Championship. Pat Kelsey, who's done a great job at Charleston, and even Andy Kennedy at UAB. They had approached him before they went interim, and he just could not pull the trigger. He had brought in so many transfers, he just didn't want to do that. And then the other name, Josh Schertz from Indiana State. If I were Josh Schertz, and this is no offense to West Virginia at all, I would hold out for more. I would hold out for the Indiana job because Mike Woodson doesn't get it done next year. He's gone. Or the Louisville job because Josh Schertz, who was at Lincoln Memorial for years, plays a great brand of basketball, up-tempo, shoots a bunch of threes. Kids love him. He could win at Louisville. So we'll see what happens to Kenny Payne. But if I'm Josh's agent, I'm saying, sit tight, my brother. There are better things ahead.
Yeah, those things will really be getting cranked up here in the next few weeks as more teams see their season come to an end.
I love the crazy season.
And the decisions.
And the portal.
Made,
I just
yeah.
live for that stuff.
Oh, man. Well, you're going to get rewarded because that it's going to be insane again this year. The names will start pouring in there pretty soon. What did you think about Dartmouth and the situation there with their players voting to unionize? That stuff's been going on for a few weeks, but what do you think that means for everybody else?
Wow. You know, those Dartmouth guys, they're no dummies. They didn't get in the Ivy League for nothing. So maybe they're onto something. But this is another thing I mourn along with the Pac-12. I've got a heavy heart. I mourn the loss of true amateur athletics, but at the same time, I realized that a bunch of money was made on the backs of kids who were poorly compensated for it. I used to think maybe a college scholarship and all the accoutrements that came with it was enough. But if you think, I always use the Peyton Manning example, how many jerseys were sold with his name on it when he was at Tennessee? And he didn't get a nickel. I think he's recovered okay.
Yeah, he's done all right.
Probably going to be all right. But still, unionization for college athletes, it just kind of boggles the mind.
All right, we'll finish on this. NCAA tournament expansion has been a big topic for years. We were talking with Joe Lunardi last week, and I think his thought was that it might land somewhere around 80.
Yeah.
Now maybe the thought is it could be somewhere between the current 68 and maybe 80, like maybe somewhere in the 70s. What are you hearing about that?
Dana O'Neill had a good story in The Athletic, and she quoted someone saying there is little to a college administrator. She said she quoted him as saying there is little to no appetite for 96 teams or really even 80. And thus, we'd be talking about 72 or 76. As she wrote, it's not merely a compromise, but a practical solution. A 96-team field would make it virtually impossible to avoid reconstructing the entire postseason calendar, especially now as 18-team conferences contend with managing their own league tournaments.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Joe said, the dudes in the green jackets whose property is also owned by CBS, which does not want to lose the Masters, kind of call the shots. And it's got to finish the week that the Masters begins. It reminds me of my rare double-double. I'll never do anything like it again. Masters practice round on Monday, and that night, the Natty in Atlanta, that was a lot of driving and a lot of scurrying. And oh, by the way, a bad case of food poisoning. Also,
stay away from the shrimp, Chris.
Pepto-Bismol is a beautiful thing. Well, but yeah, I, you know, Joe, and I trust in Joe. He worked that 80 model, but I tend to more agree with the whoever expert Dana quoted. 72 to 76 is a reasonable number. And, you know, Joe would tell you this, and we know this covering the game, and you know, if you use nothing but the eye test, some of those teams near the bottom barely deserve to get in.
Yeah.
And so I just, Billy Packer was a dear friend, and he used to say something. I agreed with most of what he said, even though sometimes he said controversial things. One of the things he said was just open it up and let everybody in. I don't think so. I think that there has to be a reward, and the teams that get in have to deserve it. And I believe that, and I would never disagree with Joe or try to, much less try to debate him. But to me, what Dana writes about here, 72 to 76, is a good compromise that's going to allow, as Joe said, some of those teams in those ridiculous super conferences to not be on the outside looking in. And I think that's what we're going to end up with. I can't say when it'll happen, but 72 to 76, I believe that's your winner.
Yeah, and you could probably do that without reconfiguring too much of the schedule, whether it's the conference tournaments or even counting back from there and looking at the regular season and that sort of thing. So it's going to happen at some point, and we'll see what the number ends up being. But for this year, it's 68 teams, and we're only a couple weeks away from Selection Sunday. So it's a great time of year here in March with some of the conference championships being decided this week. The big power conferences will play next week, and Chris and I will convene in Nashville. Looking forward to that. But for now, we'll wrap things up. Chris, always fun. Enjoy the game you're going to. Tennessee hosting Kentucky tomorrow. I'll be on the call for Vanderbilt in Florida here in Nashville. And we'll talk to you next time, man.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
He's Chris Dorch. I'm Kevin Ingram. That is the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. We'll talk to you soon.